Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. Once again, coming to you via the wonders of the internet. On this week's episode, I'm joined by Danny Law, Callum Law, no relation, and today's guest, none other than Keith Football Club and Highland League legend, Cammy Keith. How is everyone?
Very well, thanks, Ryan.
Very well, thanks, Ryan.
So, Cammy, the focus will be on you for this first part. You've just had your second child. How's that been in such a weird time, stuck at home? Has it been nice in a way?
Yeah, I mean, it's been carnage. There's only 14 months between them, but in a way, it's been, you know, kind of making the best out of this, you know, weird situation just now with being sort of working from home and things like that. Been able to spend a lot more time with the wife and the two kids. Our other daughter's obviously not able to go into nursery just now, so it's kind of all hands on deck at the moment. But it's been good just to spend a bit of time with Susan and the kids, more than I'd probably usually be getting at this time.
How are you dividing your sort of the aim of keeping fit while there's no football? Obviously, the Highland League season's over now with your actual full-time job from home.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Highland League was one of the first leagues to kind of announce it was ending with Brora declared champions a couple of weeks ago now. So, yeah, I mean, the fitness has been, you know, it's tough to do when there's two crazy kids kicking around the house and a wife needing help with a million duties. But I'm trying to get up early and just get out running. You kind of avoid the crowds in, because there has been quite a lot of people noticeably out with their, you know, walking and things like that. So I'm just trying to keep ticking over before the dreaded pre-season starts again.
When you think back, Cammy, on the Highland League season that's just been prematurely brought to a close, how do you sort of see, or what's your take on how Keith got on?
It was certainly a marked improvement on last season and the season before that. You know, I've been at Keith for a few different spells now, and certainly when I was first there, we were used to, you know, challenging for trophies and winning leagues. But with some of the, you know, the money that's bandied around the Highland League just now, Keith's unfortunately not really in a position to be, you know, up there challenging at the top. So for this season to come right bang in mid table was probably fair enough from where we've sort of been the last couple of years. So yeah, definitely a marked improvement. There was some, you know, good results along the way, beating my old team for Martin away from home and a couple of other big wins as well. Finished probably above the teams we should have finished above. And, you know, just it was a good improvement on last season, and it was a shame that it was still 5-6 games for us to go with, you know, a few opportunities in there to get a few more wins. But I guess every team will be saying the same.
Cammy, I'm sure you'd probably I love to play those games, obviously, but did it sort of feel to you and the your teammates as the sort of the right decision, really, just to call the season to a close as the Highland League have done?
It was. I mean, you were also aware of what was going on in the world and in the UK. We were playing Strathspey away in our last game, and you were sort of aware of it then. You know, the referees and linesmen weren't shaking hands, but I mean, I must admit, we were all still shaking hands with each other and indeed the opposition. And it wasn't really, you know, too much in anyone's minds, but then things just seemed to accelerate quite quickly. We still trained the Monday and the Wednesday. And 2 days later, the season was kind of called to a halt. Did I think it would be played again after that? The situation seemed to get worse, so probably not. So in the league did call it and declared Brora as champions a couple of weeks ago. I think it was, you know, definitely the right decision by the Highland League.
Take us back to the start then, Cammy. How did you, you've had 10 years in total at Keith, over two spells. But how did you kind of get your start in football? How did you first get interested in the game?
I guess it was just growing up in the sort of streets of Newmarket. I kind of grew up in a neighbourhood where everyone was always out kicking a ball on the street. I've got two younger brothers who are very close to me in age. There's only 4 years between the three of us, so we were always with a ball at our feet playing. Also played boys club football for a number of years for the likes of Dice and East End. And at the time, Dice had a little bit of an affiliation with Keith, so I ended up signing with Keith when I was about 15. Played for a lot of their youth teams, and then the reserve team and under-19s, and then finally sort of making my first season with the first team back in the 05-06 season. Had a couple of seasons with Keith then. Unfortunately won the treble in my second season, and finished top scorer in the league at 19 years old. So that was massive. And then I kind of wandered off to America for a couple of years on a scholarship for 2 years. Back to Keith again. And then I got a move to Fermartin after a few years back at Keith. And then this is actually my third spell back at Keith. So it's been a fair journey, certainly. I can't believe it's, I'm 32 now and I can't believe sort of where the career's gone when I think back to that first sort of full season with Keith. But a lot of good memories along the way, certainly.
When you were sort of first breaking in, you mentioned it there, Cammy, coming in 2005-06. What was it? Because that was obviously a very strong Keith team at the time. What was it like sort of coming into that side, and who were maybe sort of the big characters on that side?
It was. It was the likes of myself and Jamie Lennox. It was when we were sort of getting our debuts with the team. And you're right, there was some absolute massive characters in the dressing room then. Certainly two of the biggest ones were Darren Still, captain of Keith for many years and won two league titles. Was also my manager at Keith when I came back from the States as well. Someone of holding very high regard and got a lot of respect for. The likes of Derek Nicol, who was a record goal scorer at the time, as a young striker, it was great to learn a lot from him. And then there were so many other big characters in the team right through the spine. Chris Nidri in defence, Wayne Mackay in midfield, Dean Dawson, my current manager, on the wing. You know, it was just a really, really good side. And the second season when we did win it all, we made some really shrewd signings by taking in guys like Mark Perry, the former Dundee United player, Martin Wood, he used to be full time, and those were the guys that got us over the line in the end, albeit on goal difference over locals.
Cammy, when you were 19 and top scorer in the league and helping Keith to the treble and such like, were there any other clubs coming in? Were there any other options other than going across to America? Did you have anywhere else that you could have looked at as possibilities at that stage of your career? Because there was obviously a lot of attention around you at that time.
Yeah, there was. I mean, probably the biggest opportunity at the time was Nottingham Forest. Invited myself and Jamie Lennox down for a week's trial. Which was, an incredible experience and amazing to be invited down there to such a big club who've, won the European Cup twice. And Jamie and I went down there and trained and, played in a couple of friendlies and held our own. But the biggest difference for me, and I'm sure Jamie would say the same, is the physicality. At the time, all these guys around the same age as us were, used to working out in the gym. And had absolute physiques that would frighten you, whereas myself and Jamie had never even touched a weight in our life. So that was probably the biggest difference. Technically we didn't feel overly inferior, but certainly the physicality of it. It was Colin Calderwood, who was manager at the time, and he took us into a meeting at the end of the trial and basically said along those lines that we need guys in the, pushing for first team now. But the physicality levels was something that, unfortunately, it wasn't really ingrained into young Highland League players coming through at that time. That was probably the main one. I think myself and Jamie were probably both a bit disappointed not to get an opportunity at that time with Aberdeen or anything like that. Both supporting the team and the fact we were in the headlines quite a lot, and being sort of two of the top scorers in the league at that age, and both being Don's fans, but nothing materialised with them or another full-time team. And I also got the call from John Scott, who used to play for Liverpool and played Highland League for many years. His dad, Alan Scott, was Highland League manager for a while as well. I got the call from him to go out to America, and it was a big decision. I was actually at Aberdeen University at the time, and I'd done 2 years there. So I got the chance to go out there and do my third and fourth year out there and essentially get full-time football for 2 years, and I weighed it up. I was 19, I waited to turn 20 that summer, and the chances of making full-time football I thought were potentially slim back here. So this was going to be probably my only shot to go and not just get a bit of full-time football, but also get a life experience as well. So it was one I was delighted to take, and probably sort of two of the best years of my life.
You talked about differences there when you went down to Nottingham Forest. What were the differences like when you played in America? What was the university you were playing for?
It was Binghamton University, which is in upstate New York, about 2 hours from New York City. So, I mean, differences there, it was tricky. Again, the guys were, you know, physically, you know, very, very built, experienced guys in the gym that had been ingrained into them from a young age. But that's probably where I started to learn more about that side. We all had individual training programs that you did in the gym. So it wasn't just the cardio workouts that you were doing every day. We're also on the gym every day, so that's when I started to notice a bit of a difference in myself physically. Albeit still had a bit of catching up to do with the American guys, but probably the biggest difference is technically really, really good players, as I mentioned, physically very, very strong. But the Highland League and Scottish football has just got that a little bit more savvy, a little bit more streetwise than you get with some of the American guys. And that's what I noticed. We had five British players on our team, and that's probably one of the biggest things I noticed, was just that little bit of sometimes sort of sharkiness or streetwiseness that you would maybe get at home that you didn't get with the American guys.
Could you have potentially stayed in America?
Yes, I did have potential opportunities to stay there. But unless you're getting opportunities in the MLS, which are a couple of leagues below that, USL 1, USL 2, which technically are full-time, but the way the season works out there, it's very difficult to make a real good standard of living and earn a decent wage. The season only lasts for 6 months of the season, or 6 months of the year rather, as opposed to here when you're pretty much going at it for 10 months from when you start pre-season till the season ends. So unless you were getting MLS, which I wasn't getting, I kind of weighed it all up and thought, well, I've graduated now, and now's a good time to go home and try and get a proper career started work-wise, but also have the backup of at least playing semi-pro back in the Highland League.
In terms of the sort of standard you were playing at when you were at university in the States, Cammy, what was the general standard like, and how could you maybe compare it, you know, to in comparison with back home?
Yeah, I mean, the standard that I was fortunate enough to play at was the top level at college sports in the States, known as Division One, is what it's called. There's about 200 teams statewide that are classified as Division One universities. We were regularly a sort of top 35, 40 side, certainly usually top 50 anyway. So you were playing, you know, really good standard of teams in front of really big crowds. I mean, we had a new stadium that just opened as soon as I arrived there, and you used to have 3,000 sellouts, you know, Friday night lights. It was absolutely brilliant. Everything you see on the movies and more, it was just an all-round brilliant experience. You know, you're certainly not getting 3,000 people at Highland League games. You know, it's almost more like Scottish First Division crowds. You asked in terms of the standard. Overall, I'd say it was above Highland League, more sort of League One, League Two, Scotland is what I compare it to.
In terms of your goal scoring ability, wherever you've went, you've scored goals, Cammy. Has it always been something that's come sort of semi-naturally to you?
Yeah, I mean, most of my teammates, for whoever I've played for, will probably slaughter me for not being the paciest, maybe not being the most mobile, or maybe not you know, possessing some of the tricks and the skills that some of these guys have. But one thing I've always had is that knack of putting the ball in the back of the net, and it's just something that, you know, only a few guys seem to have. I've been lucky that it's always kind of been my forte ever since a young kid. It's what I've loved to do is hit the ball in the back of the net, and even sometimes if I'm having a poor game, I know I'm always in the game with, you know, half a chance towards the end, which can, you know, win us the match. So thankfully it's always something I've been sort of blessed with, but at the same time it's always something I've always practiced, you know, over and over again with shooting and training and things like that to try and get the goal record that I have.
You obviously are now Keith's top goal scorer of all time, something I'm sure means a lot to you. Was that sort of the motivation for going back for that, the spell you're currently in, that you wanted to be the top boy in that list?
Yeah, it was a big factor. I'd really enjoyed 3 years at Fermartin, especially the first two under Steve Patterson. For you know, for a lot of people say a lot about Steve, but he's a great guy, and he's got a you know an amazing football brain there as well. And you know, he was the person that signed me, and I was lucky enough to play with him. The last season at Fermartin was probably the best squad I played with potentially in my career. You know, with guys like Paul Lawson and Stuart Anderson and Craig McEwen, should have won the league, but we ended up losing to Cove by 4 points. But myself and Chris Hunter, the manager at the time, I was kind of in some games, out some games. So I decided to take a wee break. I went and got married and, you know, we went away travelling for a honeymoon for a while. And I came back at Christmas ready to get back into it, but decided that it was probably time to seek pastures new away from Fermartin. I had a good few offers on the table. You know, particularly was keen to probably go to the likes of Cove. But when Keith came calling again, I did feel like I had, you know, a little bit of unfinished business. And yeah, certainly the fact I was so close to the goal record. I was only 18 behind Derek Nicol when I left to go to Fermartin in the first place. So that did sort of weigh heavily on my decision. And also I was lucky enough to be offered a testimonial from Keith as well, which particularly at this level of football is obviously a massive honour and a massive thing to be awarded to.
In terms of your sort of time at Fermartin, you spoke about the last season a wee bit there, Cammy, your time at Fermartin. Did that maybe squad strength that they had, and there was a lot of striking options as well, do you think that maybe counted against you in terms of not getting perhaps the run of games, you know, you had regularly at Keith before and that you have now at Keith?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, the first two seasons at Fermartin, I was a regular all the time and scoring a good number of goals over my first two seasons. I even scored a decent amount over the third season, but you're right, there was some really good striking options there with, you know, excellent strikers, particularly like Sunil Gold, who's went back to Locos. You know, he's same age as me and one of the best strikers I've ever, you know, played with or against. Gary Wood, who came from a higher level, was excellent. And Scott Barber, who they paid a lot of money for to sign from Fraserburgh. So the options across the team were huge and full of talent for sure. I don't know. I mean, Chris had a massive clear out of Pele's players when he arrived and only kept five or six of us from Pele's squad. The whole team was totally reshaped. Which I don't know how, if I was just wasn't his man or wasn't his signing or whatever. Nothing against Chris personally and certainly not the club, as I actually, you know, love my 3 years at Fermartin. There's a lot of good people there behind the scenes. It was disappointing not to win the league there. It's ultimately what I did go there for. I joined after the season where they lost to Cove on the final day. And unfortunately, the only thing I was able to win at Fermartin was the Aberdeenshire Cup. However, on a personal note, that was the only trophy I'd left to win at this level. So it was good to at least win that at Fermartin. But yeah, disappointed to not win the league there. And yeah, I think that there was certainly increased competition that last season, which probably weighed on my decision as well.
Speaking about Pele, Cammy, I mean, there's lots of people from various clubs have sort of spoken about him as a manager. What was it that made him, I suppose, so popular with players and made him have the success that he had across his whole career, do you think, Cammy?
He just had a really, really good understanding of football. You know, Pele takes a lot of stick for, you know, some off-field issues that he's maybe had in the past, but having worked with him closely, his training is just so enjoyable. It's all ball, 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 possession, games, short-sighted stuff. The boys actually really, really enjoy his training. And the result, you get a lot back from it. So it was great that he was able to at least get that monkey off his back and win a trophy in my first season there. Things kind of petered out a little bit the second season when we only sort of finished top six. And Pele and Athol kind of came to a decision to go their separate ways. But yeah, he's one of the best managers I've worked with. It was great that he gave me the opportunity to go there. And play for him. I mean, this is a guy, you know, that's played for Man United and managed Aberdeen full-time. So he certainly knows his stuff. And I can generally say, you know, his training and the way he saw the game as an offensive, attacking, you know, game was right up my street. all our games. You know, some of the scorelines were racked up were incredible because he was all about goals and wanting to get more and attention to the ball. He just really, really knew his stuff, which probably doesn't come across to a lot of people who maybe don't know him so well.
And I suppose as well, having said all that, did you maybe, and you sort of hinted at not winning the league, but maybe did you feel a wee bit disappointed as well not to even have more success in the Cups with all the combination of factors you had coming together at that time?
Yeah, it definitely. And obviously since I've left for Martin, I've added a couple more trophies too, with the Highland League Cup, and I think they've won the Cup, Aberdeenshire Cup in our time, and the Aberdeenshire Shield as well. So certainly just the one trophy in my three seasons there did feel like, you know, a little bit of a disappointment with the money they did shell out to bring me to the club in the first place. The ultimate, you know, goal was to win the title, which we came up short a couple of occasions. But yeah, certainly more cups would have been good as well. I do feel, you know, for Athol's investment that he's made in the team, that, and especially the guys I played with at that time, we probably should have added more. As I say, they have subsequently went on and won a few cups, but they're obviously still missing that elusive league title that they're so desperate to get.
Cammy, you're obviously 32 now. Hopefully lots left in the tank, but how long do you see yourself playing for?
I don't know. It's one of them difficult ones where at this level of football, you do want to keep playing as long as you can. But when you get to this age and you've got wife and you've got two kids, particularly two young kids, other sort of priorities tend to make their way in. And, you know, a job, you know, a good job as well. So, you know, the football's maybe not quite as high up the priority list as it once was. But certainly, you know, one piece of advice I've always been given by guys that have retired, ex-teammates, is you should certainly play as long as you can. You know, I'm only five short of getting 350 Highland League goals, so there's certainly a few targets left there in terms of goals. And it would just be nice to win another trophy at Keith as well. You know, it's been a good few years since Keith won a trophy, which I think was a Highland League Cup back in 2013, yeah, Right before I moved to Fermartin. Yeah, so it would be good to add, you know, something, you know, back to Keith in terms of a trophy. There may be, you know, to a lot of guys, you see them now, don't realise how successful Keith were in the past. It'd be good to, you know, finish at least with some sort of piece of silverware again for the club.
Cammy, what impact do you think it's had on the Highland League, Cove Rangers being promoted up to League Two, and the potential that Broda Rangers won't be there next year? I mean, from a Keith perspective, does that make it the chance of success for your team more realistic? But is it also a double-edged sword in a way that I guess that you probably enjoyed playing those games against Cove and enjoy the games up at Broda as well?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, first off, on Cove, I think it's brilliant, you know, that they've got promoted and got into League Two. And by all, you know, by the looks of things, probably going up to League One at the first attempt. I think it's great for the city to have another team at this level doing so well. When you see Dundee, which is a smaller city than Aberdeen, and it's got two teams, it's good that there is another team in the city doing well. And, you know, their crowds have been great, you know, by far and away the biggest in their division. They've always had the ambition to do that, certainly. You know, when I was speaking to them after leaving for Martin, that was always the ambition, was to get up the league as soon as possible. And I think that the sky's the limit for them. It's brilliant to see, you know, that they've actually still got probably the nucleus of their Highland League team. I think usually 6-7 guys that start are the guys that played for them in the Highland League. They've got some fantastic players, obviously an experienced manager, and they made some good additions. So I really hope they do go and continue up the leagues. Broda, it's a difficult one. You know, always enjoy the trips to Broda and Wick and places like that, particularly the way home after you get a result. But I mean, Broda are a superb side. You know, one of the last season in particular is one of the best teams I've ever played at this level, and they were by far away the best team, you know, with a lot of guys that have played full time for Cali and Ross County. You know, whether they want to go up, I don't think they were ready for it a few years ago when they won back-to-back titles, but by all accounts I'm hearing that they are really keen to do so now. There'll be some massive trips for them for sure. but they're an excellent side. And again, I think they'd more than hold their own in that division. In terms of us, yeah, of course, when two great teams go up, it does give the other teams an opportunity. But I think first and foremost, it'll be the likes of Locos, who still are awaiting their first Highland League title. For Martin, who have mentioned are awaiting their first Highland League title. Fraserburgh, very strong. And Bucky, I'm sure, come into the mix as well. And probably should mention Rothes. They've spent a load of money over the last 2 years and they made great strides last season. So I can't really see anyone breaking into that top five league-wise. But you're right, of course, it gives opportunities for the likes of us and the Cups to maybe have a bit more success.
On a sort of separate note, because we didn't quite touch on it earlier, Cammy, I was wanting to go back to the Keith, your treble season and winning that league title as you did. What was the sort of what was it like, I suppose, before the game? You know, Locos were obviously in control of their destiny and you had to wait until obviously their game was finished to know you'd won the league. What was that sort of whole build up and post match? What was that all like for you and everyone at Keith?
It was probably the most incredible day I've ever had in football. We just had to take care of ourselves and beat Nairn at home, which we did 3-0. Locos were at home to Cove, and at the time, Cove were very much a mid-table team. So we all fully expected Locos to go on and do it. But I think that the tide sort of turned the week before. Locos were winning their game and were seconds from winning the league that very day, but we got a late winner up at Fraserburgh, which is often a bit of a bogey ground for us in recent years. We got a late winner up there to take it to the final day. And I think Locos apparently had been celebrating, thinking that they won the title the week before, until they heard the news that we got a late winner. So that made it 2 points going into the final day. We also won our game. We knew that Locos had scored against Cove, but then we heard Aurora go up from guys listening on radios and making phone calls. We knew Cove had equalised. Then was the most agonising 2 minutes of my life. We finished 2 minutes before the Cove game and everyone was just huddled around listening to phones, listening to radios. We knew Harlaw Park was absolutely packed that day with Locos fans expecting to see them win their first title. And then when the full-time whistle went, when we realised we won the league on goal difference in the final game of the season, the feeling was just incredible. I mean, they talk about helicopter Sundays. We had to physically wait for
the
Highland League trophy to come up in a car from Inverurie to Keith. We had to wait for that. So everyone's just mulling around the pits, celebrating, hugging, trying to get any kind of beer or champagne and get our hands on. And it was just incredible. It was unbelievable to win it in that fashion. It was just indescribable. And then to go and beat Bucky in the cup final, Highland League cup final the next week, 5-0 it was, to go and complete the treble was just an incredible end to the season, and a great way to end my time before I went off to the States.
What was it, do you think, that sort of made that side as good as you were and go on and achieve what you did in that season?
Certainly the big characters people have mentioned, like Stille, Derek Nicol, Wayne Mackay, our manager Martin Allen was, you know, fantastic as well. And he also had a really good playing career with Montrose when they were up in the Championship. So he certainly knew his stuff. But I think the key was the additions to that team, bringing in guys like Mark Perry that had been there, done it. We took them in around December, January time. Martin Wood, it just gave us that little bit more edge just to get through a lot of close games, and particularly that one at Fraserburgh the week before. So I think adding that experience from guys that had been there and done it really just took us over the line in the end, albeit just.
All right. Well, that happy note concludes our chat with you, Cammy, about your career. Hopefully you stay with us for our discussions on the latest developments in the SPFL and further afield. Since we last spoke or recorded, we're still no further forward with the closure of the season in Scotland. We are expecting a decision hopefully tomorrow, the SPFL having a meeting today and then consulting with clubs. UEFA obviously warned nations that if they end their seasons early, there might be consequences in that. A bit of a ridiculous threat, guys, would you say, from UEFA?
Possibly, but I think it is a ridiculous threat from UEFA. I think in terms of the SPFL coming to a decision, I personally be surprised if that happens this week. I can see them sort of prolonging this until slightly closer to the end of the month before anything's decided, just to, I guess, basically gauge how UEFA are going to deal with this situation. The Belgian one's obviously very interesting. So I think we're probably going to end up with, I think it'd be unlikely that we'll move too far forward this week, but you never know. You never know, because some of the lower league clubs are pushing to try and get the prize money. And if they vote in strong numbers, then that might be enough to tip it. But I think that we'll look to probably closer to the end of the month before we find out what's going to happen with the 2019-20 season. But I mean, it seems really unlikely that we're going to get any football played again anytime soon. So I mean, I think the longer it drags on, you feel like the natural thing is to come to a conclusion, call the season, and start planning ahead for when we can start again, because it is going to be, the players are all going to have to go through a pre-season because the shutdown's been so long. So we just have to watch out what happens over the next couple of days.
I think the way UEFA's handled this hasn't been a great example to anybody really, because the Belgium took the decision to declare their current standings as final because they're, like, I think, like everybody else, realistic that it's going to be a long time before things get back to normal because of the coronavirus. But UEFA sort of just delaying tactics and not really wanting to explore options about how the season could be declared over. If they don't give any guidance on that, it's natural that individual nations are going to decide, well, here's what we are doing, and just stick with it. So to threaten to withhold European positions for next season, I thought was ridiculous. And I think it's getting to the point now, as much as Scotland sort of following UEFA, it's getting to the point now where before too long, I think the SPFL and SFL have to make a decision because UEFA won't be any further on.
The problem is, obviously, it's between the haves and the have-nots. Like, it's the big leagues that have got the big TV contracts, and those TV companies, some of them are going to hold off in paying the money that they're due these leagues because they're not getting to show these final games live. I know in like French football, that's the big problem just now with the main broadcasters there. So with the big five leagues, they're obviously keen to finish the seasons because they want to get as much money as they can out of the TV companies. But in places like Scotland and the smaller leagues, where that's not such a big issue, there's obviously more of a reliance for the smaller clubs on trying to get the prize money, and then the natural progression just to try and move on to the next season and just draw a line over this one. So it's difficult, and UEFA is kind of torn between, I presume, whether they want to try and work with the bigger leagues, which I imagine is probably where they feel that they've maybe got more vested interests because of the financial repercussions of that, or to try and find something that works for most of the countries, which is in truth what they should be doing.
I think that's why they come into this behind, speaking about playing behind closed doors, because they could in theory resume football earlier if it was behind closed doors and for the big leagues to finish. But in speaking to people in Scotland, that seems like a non-starter, because even most Premiership clubs in Scotland, your biggest income is people coming through the gate and match day hospitality and things like that. And if you're playing games and don't have that, then it's going to be a dead loss for clubs.
Elsewhere, Aberdeen confirmed this week that there'll be wage deferrals for playing staff, coaches, other high earners at the club, which obviously protects the club's lowest paid employees. £2 million in new investment as well from the group of investors that includes Chairman Dave Cormack. Do you think, guys, that in this situation, where Aberdeen have clearly, like all clubs, had a lot of financial pressure on them, they've almost played a blinder from a sort of PR perspective, in the sense that the high earners have put their money where their mouth is to help the club through the period?
Definitely. I think they've done very well in this situation. Dave Cormack had outlined that there was this potential £5 million black hole from the cash flow situation by not playing these games that are coming up. So they've managed to, with the deferrals, that's going to save the club around about £1.1 million in the short term. And then they've also found another £2 million of investment from Dave Cormack and the investor group that he's part of. And that alleviates that problem that they find themselves in the short term. Obviously, there's the longer term issue. We don't know how long this is going to drag on for. But I think Aberdeen have done really well. They've shown some strong leadership. We had a video conference with Dave Cormack on Saturday, and he spoke with myself and some of the other reporters about his plans. And the one thing that you can get is that he understands the gravity of this situation, the potential I mean, how hard he's working. I think it was 6 o'clock in the morning at Atlanta, and he was there chatting to us, and he'd already been up and was doing a lot of work to try and rectify the situation and to see what can be done to ensure that this situation, Aberdeen can get through it as seamlessly as possible. It's a difficult challenge for all clubs, whether you're in League Two, the Highland League, or in the top flight. It's a really tricky situation because all these clubs are trying to deal with no money coming in. But I've been very impressed with how Aberdeen have dealt with it so far.
I think the one thing with the way Aberdeen have gone about things so far is they haven't really rushed into anything. I think the first sort of couple of weeks after everything was shut down, there was a lot of people, and maybe we are guilty of it as well, reporting on it. People at various clubs and within organisations panicking quite a bit about what was going to happen. But I think Dave Cormack and, well, his board and Derek McInnes have sort of taken this approach of wait and see what develops, and if we can put these, you know, they've put obviously these plans in place, which are really, I think, it's quite a pragmatic approach they've taken in terms of the more longer term, and if this does potentially go on, even say to the end of the year, I've heard Dave Cormack speaking about that the club would be in a position to come through that, which I think is quite impressive the way they've gone about it.
Obviously, the technicality of not putting players on furlough, instead using things like wage deferrals, means that, as Derek McInnes has spoken about in the press, that he can stay fully engaged with his staff and his players and the staff can stay fully engaged in the process of keeping themselves fit, keeping themselves up with analysis of games they've had already this season, things like that. That's obviously going to be a huge benefit when football does return.
I think so, because I think the players would feel probably quite isolated if they were left to their own devices for 2-3 months. And I mean, that is what's happening at other clubs, and the other managers, they aren't really able to, get in touch with their players to tell them what they want them to do. It would all be on the players themselves on a voluntary basis to keep themselves fit. Whereas I think at the moment, Aberdeen's got, they're able to work with a schedule, albeit the players are sort of training in isolation. But it's I can understand why Aberdeen have done that, because, I mean, these players, athletes, they're used to sort of training in that team environment, and to go from that to not being able to train together for 2-3 months, that would obviously create challenges for the team. So if they're able to do that, and the players themselves have taken wage deferrals to try and help make that happen, help mitigate some of the financial problems. So it does seem to be, when you heard Derek McInnes and Dave Cormack talk about the reasons why they were opposed to going down the route of putting the players on furlough leave, it sounded like it was a good call to make.
Obviously, Cali Thistle have gone the other way in terms of furloughing their staff, similar to Ross County. On Cali's Thistle side, Scott Gardner speaking this morning about how he hopes that all the good work they've done to sort of steady the ship financially in the last few months won't be undone by the shutdown. That's pretty worrying from a Cali Thistle supporter's perspective.
It is, but I mean, you can understand also why the likes of the government scheme, where they can qualify for 80% of the players' wages up to £2,500 per month, why that's a financial policy that would be able to support them. Cali Thistle, they've been pretty open about the financial challenges that they've gone through since dropping out of the top flight. And they're obviously sitting second in the Championship just now. And I mean, they could stand to gain if the Scottish Premiership was to go to a 14-team league next year, and then that would give them a massive financial injection if they thought they were going to have at least a season of top-flight football to look forward to when play does resume. But, I mean, obviously that's a big, big question mark just now. But, yeah, they've taken the decision to place all of the majority of their staff, players and non-playing staff on furlough leave. So it'll be, I mean, it's an understandable decision in their situation.
I mean, we've spoken there about furloughing and not wage deferrals and various things. And Kame, obviously, Keith, like I think most Highland League clubs now, you guys are forgoing your wages until football resumes. That and Keith, how did that sort of come about? You know, did the players sort of have a meeting themselves, or did you have discussions with the directors and sort of come to that arrangement, or how did it come about?
Basically, the manager Dean, who I'm close with anyway, having played with him for years, had a chat with me as captain, and I explained to the rest of the guys what the financial situation was with the club. And you know, you're right with a few of the things you mentioned there. I mean, a lot of clubs, particularly in Scotland, depend on guys coming through the gate and hospitality, and Keith's no different. You know, obviously the wages we're on are nothing compared to the guys in the upper levels of Scottish football, but we're the same. I mean, we had hospitality booked out for the rest of the season, which is, you know, a good day out for a lot of guys at Highland League, or a big cash earner. So with that not coming in, and with no games on, it was just a no-brainer to obviously not accept any wages until, you know, football resumes again. And I'm pretty sure that all Highland League clubs are the same.
Does it give you quite a lot of, you know, as captain, obviously, and the club means a lot to you, give you almost pride in a way, you know, that as a squad you've come together and said, look, we'll do this to try and ensure, or to ensure that the club's, you know, still there when this is all over?
Well, that's it. And especially, you know, Keith, when a couple of seasons ago, certainly after I rejoined, about, you know, a few months later, it was no secret that the club were in financial difficulty. I think they've managed to get themselves back on their feet a bit. You know, and the corporate hospitality and things like that certainly helped. So when this was, you know, obviously in the news everywhere, it was just a bit of a no-brainer for us. We wanted to help out the club as much as possible. They do a lot for us in terms of our just little things. You know, your training kit, you're putting on training sessions and traveling to games on, you know, buses and all that kind of stuff. So it was just something we had to do collectively to try and give a little bit back to the club.
I suppose at Keith and even across the Highland League, Camid, is it with, you know, players not taking wages, and that, does that almost show, I suppose, the sort of sense of community and that sort of family spirit that exists within the Highland League, that you've everyone sort of doing this to ensure that the clubs come through this?
Well, that's it, and exactly that, really. I mean, everyone's got a full-time job, obviously, in the Highland League football at semi-pro levels, very much, everyone's sort of secondary job. So it is all about the community, and that's something I've always found playing Highland League, is that no matter what team you play for, there's always been a, you know, a really big sense of community. And you can see that everyone's doing that just now, trying to help out their clubs. But I've also noticed a lot of clubs are trying to help out in their community with, you know, whether it's shopping or helping older people or anything like that. I've noticed a lot of the clubs are trying to do a lot of that on social media and stuff, and advertiser services to the people sort of in need within these towns. So it's been good to see, and hopefully it does help a lot of people out.
Okay, well, we shall tie things up there then. Thank you very much, Kame, for coming on the programme today. Much appreciated.
No problem at all. Happy to be on. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks as well, of course, to Danny and Callum. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Ryan.
No problem, Ryan. Thank you.
Okay, should, as always, you want to ask us anything, make a point, or just get in touch about something we've discussed today, please email at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. As I've said the last couple of weeks, we'll still be here every Tuesday with guest interviews like today with Kame, and the latest developments as we have them. So please look out for Northern Goal every Tuesday. And if you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, stay safe out there the next week. Cheers.
Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.